traditional Ukrainian folk song by the Kuban Cossack Choir. That's actually a love song, a young girl singing about her fancy for a handsome young man by the name of Petrus. Вітаю вас всіх, шановні радіослухачі, на радіопередачі «Наш голос» Радіо Українського коріння по мережі PCJ Radio, яка подається вам з Британської Колумбії в Канаді. З вами Павліна Макварі, дякую, що рішили перебути зі мною наступну годину. Hello there and welcome to «Наш голос» Ukrainian Roots Radio, coming to you from Vancouver Island on the west coast of Canada, courtesy PCJ Radio. I'm your host, Paulette Demchik-Macquarie, Pokrinske Pavlina, and I'm delighted to have you with me. We've got a great program lined up for you. We have news from Ukraine, courtesy Ukraine Today. As well, we have a special commentary feature, again, courtesy Ukraine Today, and that will be the American Ambassador to Ukraine, Jeffrey Pyatt, speaking with Volodymyr Solohub. So stay tuned for that as well. We've got Ukrainian Jewish heritage and a portrait of a very well-known and beloved Jewish Ukrainian painter in Ukraine. As well, we've got our usual proverb of the week, other items of interest, and great Ukrainian music. And coming up next is a group from Ukraine called Tin Sonsya, and that translates as Shadows of the Sun. And here they are now with a song called Vitrak, Windmill.
Над степом, над долами, вітер грався ковилами, стрінувся йому старий покинутий вітряк. І гукнув до нього вітер, вже либо не півстоліття, ти стоїш самотня тут, немов навік закляк. І гукнув до нього вітер, вже либо не півстоліття, ти стоїш самотньо тут, немов навік закляк. Пам'ятаєш твої крила, стільки хліба молотили, і були з тобою ми, як рідні брати. Тож тепер летімо, брате, годі тліючи стояти, коли маєш крила, то літати мусиш ти. Тож тепер летімо, брате, годі тліючи стояти, коли маєш крила, то літати мусиш ти. А на млині ворон чорний гаркнув вітру на все горло. За що ти глузуєш з нього, в чим його вина? Не тривож дарма старого і лети собі з Богом. Чашу він свого гіркого вже допив до дна. Не чіпай старого і лети собі з Богом. Чашу він свого гіркого вже допив до дна. Лиш вітряк стояв отерпло, тільки стало в чорнах терпко, а скажений вітер від свого не відступав. Так злетіти захотілось, аж у грудях заскрипіло, і змахнувши крилами, на трави він упав. Так злетіти захотілось, аж у грудях заскрипіло, і змахнувши крилами, на трави він упав.
Now, the latest news stories from Ukraine, courtesy Ukraine's first international English news channel, Ukraine Today.
Four Ukrainian army soldiers wounded near Avdiivka in Donetsk region have been evacuated from the front on Thursday. According to local media, a helicopter took them to Dnipropetrovsk. Previously, the city hospital accepted 10 other soldiers. The medics say seven of them were wounded with firearms and bombs. The others suffered minor injuries. The hospital personnel is awaiting more patients to come, though the doctors are reluctant to state the precise number of soldiers.
Ukrainian pilot Nadia Savchenko has been sentenced to 22 years in prison by a Russian court. Judges found her guilty on charges of complicity in the deaths of two Russian journalists and of crossing the Russian border illegally. For the duration of her case, her legal team have said the charges are fabricated and a guilty verdict was a foregone conclusion. They expect to fight for her release through diplomatic channels. Many analysts suggest Savchenko could be freed by means of a prisoner exchange between Kyiv and Moscow. The 34-year-old's case dates back to June 17, 2014. That's the day she was abducted by Kremlin-backed separatist forces and forcibly taken across the border to Russia. This footage was shot just 1 week later. It shows the first official interrogation of Savchenko on Russian territory. Nadia recounts the moment when she was captured. I didn't see a checkpoint, just some blown-up equipment at first. Then I saw where the ambush had taken place. They threw a sack over me. They probably took me through a checkpoint, but I didn't see anything. Savchenko's lawyers believe this meeting was when the false case against their client began to take shape. The Ukrainian pilot has always maintained she was already detained when the two Russian journalists were killed. Savchenko was later taken to Moscow, where she was held in pre-trial detention for more than a year. In that time, she was appointed to Ukraine's delegation to the Parliamentary Assembly of the Council of Europe. That move, in theory, granted her immunity from prosecution and should have led to her release. In August 2015, it was decided the pilot's case would be heard in Russia's Rostov region, not in Moscow. Savchenko's lawyers say the choice of a remote location was an attempt by the Kremlin to deter observers and journalists from court hearings. 1 month later, proceedings began. Savchenko set the tone for all her future court appearances. From her glass enclosure, she denounced the trial as a sham and accused Russia of being hypocritical and two-faced. After that first hearing, Russia extended her arrest a number of times. In response, the 34-year-old carried out several hunger strikes, including most recently a dry hunger strike, when she even refused water. All the while, international pressure on Russia has grown almost daily. Savchenko's plight has been highlighted by rallies and protests across Europe and North America, with EU and US officials leading calls for her release.
United Nations Secretary General Ban Ki-moon has insisted captured Ukrainian pilot Nadiya Savchenko must be released. That's according to Volodymyr Yelchenko, Ukraine's permanent representative to the United Nations. He said Secretary General assured the UN would assist in the freeing of Ukrainian pilot. The United States blame Russia of total disrespect of justice. Washington officials have long condemned Savchenko's capture and now her sentence. They say her imprisonment strictly violates both the Minsk agreements and supreme law. Ukraine will intensify pressure on Russian authorities to release Nadiya Savchenko. President Petro Poroshenko met with Savchenko's mother Maria in his office. The Ukrainian president promised the world community will assist Kyiv in freeing her daughter. German Foreign Minister Frank-Walter Steinmeier arrived in Moscow on Wednesday, aiming to discuss with Putin the issue of Savchenko. On Thursday, the message was given to the US State Secretary John Kerry. He is set to hold a meeting both with Putin and Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov. Intriguing information appeared the day before the numerous diplomatic meetings. Russian ambassador to Ukraine, Mykhailo Zurabov, is said to have stated Nadiya Savchenko may return to Ukraine in less than 2 weeks. The terms of the alleged agreement are currently unknown. The trial on Akhtem Chihos and two other Crimean Tatar activists continues. They are accused of organizing and participating in mass demonstrations in Simferopol 2 years ago. The so-called general prosecutor of Russia-occupied authorities on the Crimean Peninsula, Natalia Poklonska, demands all three culprits must be sentenced to 15 years behind bars. Their lawyer, Mykola Polozov, instead claims the case is forged. He charges Poklonska of being a Kremlin envoy to the occupied Ukrainian territories. Two more imprisoned Ukrainians, Mykola Karpyuk and Stanislav Klich, are set to be brought to trial on Thursday. Last time, the Supreme Court of Grozny refused to release the arrested. 2 years ago, both Ukrainians were captured and accused of killing Russian soldiers during the Chechen War 20 years ago. The 50th so-called humanitarian convoy has set off from Russia, heading for Ukraine's occupied Donbas region. It consists of some 90 trucks carrying more than 1,000 tons supply, supposedly humanitarian goods. The first so-called aid arrived in Ukraine 2 years ago. Kyiv authorities claim every time a convoy crosses the border, the Russian-backed separatist forces increase their attacks. Ukraine and the West suspect, along with foodstuff, Russia provides its militants with weapons and shells. Russia has not allowed the Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe nor Red Cross representatives to conduct proper examinations of the convoys.
In the middle of a vast exclusion zone in northern Ukraine, the world's largest land-based moving structure has been built to prevent deadly radiation spewing from the Chernobyl nuclear disaster site for the next 100 years. On April 26, 1986, a botched test at the Soviet nuclear plant sent clouds of smouldering nuclear material across much of Europe. A concrete sarcophagus was hastily built over the site of the stricken reactor to contain the worst of the radiation, but a more permanent solution has been in the works since late 2010. Easily visible from miles away, the 30,000-ton new safe confinement arch will be pulled into position over the site later this year to create a steel cad casement to block radiation and to allow the remains of the reactor to be dismantled safely.
The arch is now at its full height and full width and full length, 108 metres tall, 250 metres wide, and 150 metres long, and it will act as a safe confinement over the number 4 reactor, and it's planned to last for 100 years, it's designed to last for 100 years, to give Ukraine a chance to dismantle the number 4 reactor and make it safe forever. We plan to move the arch at the end of November this year and place it over the arch. The tilting panels you can see in the background will be raised and then lowered and sealed around the reactor. And then we commission all the systems to make sure it's active.
The European Bank for Reconstruction and Development funded the arch. It cost a total of $1.7 billion and involved donations from more than 40 governments. The upcoming 30th anniversary of the disaster has shone a new light on the long-term impact of the worst nuclear meltdown in history. The official short-term death toll from the accident was 31. However, the total death toll and long-term health effects remain a subject of intense debate, with many more dying of radiation-related illnesses such as cancer.
Hybrid Solutions for the Security in the Black Sea Region conference has kicked off in Odessa. During a two-day event, defense and security experts will discuss the main security threats in the Black Sea area and the ways to address them.
The event was organized by NATO, Harvard University's Kennedy School of Government, German Marshall Fund, and charity fund Pridunavia, and brought together more than 60 experts in the defense and security area.
We talk not about hybrid war or hybrid warfare. We're talking about hybrid solutions. This is a time we need to think about out of the box and bring some solutions and see which solutions could be viable and implemented, which should be discussed later.
The opening panel consisted of the director of Harvard Black Sea Security Program, chairman of Odessa Regional Council, ambassadors of the U.S. and Turkey. In the beginning of the conference, Dr. Lado Roslitsky, Director for Strategic Communications of Ukraine Today, read a letter from NATO representative and called on the participants to commemorate the victims of the Brussels attacks with a moment of silence. During his opening remarks, U.S. Ambassador to Ukraine mentioned two types of security threats to Ukraine, external and internal one.
What happens here in Ukraine will play a critical role in securing what has been the goal of American foreign policy for a quarter century now,
that is a Europe whole, free, and at peace. But equally important is how Ukraine's leaders and its people react to this challenge. I'm not talking about the use of force, but rather the implementation of deep and lasting reform.
The conference will last for 2 days, and its organizers hope it'll bring Ukraine and the entire Black Sea region one step closer to peace and security. This is Volodymyr Soloup and Andriy Postavets reporting from Odessa for Ukraine Today.
And with that, we've come to the end of this week's Ukraine News Roundup for this edition of Nash Holos Ukrainian Roots Radio. To hear more news from Ukraine Today, check all of this week's editions of Nash Holos at www.nashholos.com. And for their full roster of breaking stories, as well as interviews, press reviews, and in-depth analysis on Ukraine, follow Ukraine Today on YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, and their live blog, uatoday.tv. Ви слухайте радіопрограму «Наш голос» Радіо Українського коріння по мережі PCJ Radio, яка подається вам англійською мовою з Британської Колумбії в Канаді. You're listening to «Наш голос» Ukrainian Roots Radio, coming to you on the PCJ Radio Network from Vancouver Island in beautiful British Columbia, Canada.
Ой, послала мене мати до Дунаю густі прати. Ой, послала мене мати до Дунаю густі прати. Ой, не прала, ой, не прала, з парубками простояла. Ой, не прала, ой, не прала, з парубками простояла. Дунаю, Дунаю, дуже я чу Дунаю, яка в тебе земна доля на краю, на краю. Дунаю, Дунаю, дуже я чу Дунаю, яка в тебе земна доля на краю, на краю. За тебе мати била, щоб хлопцю не любила. Я ж нікого не любила, тільки Петра та Данила. Тільки Петра заступала, кучеряла, одівала. Дунаю, Дунаю, Дунаєчку, Дунаю, яка зімна вода на краю, на краю. Дунаю, Дунаю, Дунаєчку, Дунаю, яка зімна вода на краю, на краю.
From Leeds, England, that was the Ukrainians and a traditional Ukrainian folk song called Dunayu Dunayu, and that translates as Danube, as in the Danube River. Up next, a song that is on YouTube, and it is fairly recent. It was posted in 2014, and there is no information as to who recorded it or the origins of the song, but is presumably sung by soldiers currently fighting at the front in eastern Ukraine. The song is called Oy Uluzi Pid Donbasom, and that translates as A Meadow in the Donbass.
Ой, у лузі під Донбасом в кроваву годину поставали наші хлопці знов за батьківщину. Поставали наші хлопці знов за батьківщину. Країну злії люди хочуть зґвалтувати, тому стали українці її захищати, тому стали українці її захищати. Із всієї України зібрались завзяті, грудьми встали до загину рятувати матір, грудьми встали до загину рятувати матір. Ради смерті урагани, смертно сила люта, та не зможуть ці тирани в рабство нас закути, та не зможуть ці тирани в рабство нас закути. Буде жити добра слава на землі козацькій, і збереже Бог державу у любові братській, і збереже Бог державу у любові братській.
Up next, a look at Ukraine's rich Jewish heritage, then and now. Brought to you by the Ukrainian Jewish Encounter Initiative, based in Toronto, Ontario.
Welcome to Ukrainian Jewish Heritage on Nash Holos Ukrainian Roots Radio. I'm Peter Baeger. There is a classic expression that asserts, when cans roar, the muses fall silent. In times of distress and upheaval, creativity and art may falter. However, there are always those artists who quietly and stubbornly continue their work, no matter what the circumstances. The recent exhibition, Jewish Art in Ukraine, The Torah in the Paintings of Yehen Reutman, offers an example. The show, which was sponsored by the KU city government and with the support of the Jewish community of the city, was held at the Museum of the History of KU. The museum presented the Torah Project as a series of paintings that illustrate renowned biblical subjects. The artist and poet Reutman believes that humanity, and in particular Ukraine, is living through a complex historical period. There is a fundamental epochal change happening. Sharp conflicts of opinion erupt. The old ways of life are being challenged, ruined, and discarded. This powerful process affects the consciousness of people and fundamentally alters viewpoints. In order to take advantage and sustain such changes, society needs to believe in truth, justice, and morality. For the Jewish people, the Torah is a source of these understandings. The sacred texts guide the Jewish people through the trials they have experienced over millennia. These texts offer them strength and wisdom through their entire lives, and also offer a guide forward for development. It is this time-tested wisdom and experience that Reutmann offers his co-citizens. These are citizens who have found themselves in difficult circumstances. They are citizens who fervently seek a foothold, a point of view that will enable them to move forward. Regarding his work in light of the present situation in Ukraine, Reutmann has remarked, "This is now a difficult time. There is a war. All is shameless and deceitful. But when you come to the Torah, you realize that there you will find the truth." Reutmann has been a socially and politically aware artist deeply affected by current events in Ukraine. He has stated that those pro-Russian forces engaged in war in eastern Ukraine are simply slaves who do not want to be free. And in response to the tumult, Reutmann has said that for an artist it is simply necessary to sit and work and create and paint. Reutmann's father, although an artist, did not encourage his son to pursue an artistic career. Reutmann found his way to art only much later, in adulthood. He did not have formal academic training. He was taken under the wing of the Ukrainian artists and sculptors Ada Rybachuk and Volodymyr Melnichenko. Reutmann's creative path in his latest work was challenging. "It was difficult for me," he has admitted, "because, as he said, the entire world emerges from the Torah." Preliminary explorations of his bold compositions were done at a computer on the second floor of the Halotsky Synagogue in Kyiv. "I sat down at the computer and started to draw, and it started to happen," Reutmann said. The initial designs were then executed in oil paintings. Reutmann has revealed that he had to undergo surgery and that his painting carried him through a difficult period. "It inspired me so much that I became healthier," he said. Reutmann was strongly drawn to the human figure, especially faces, and his work reflects this interest. In past interviews, he pointed out that through the line, through composition, you can relay in a painting the psychology of a character. While Reutmann's creative spirit and force carried him through difficult periods in the past, he could not avoid what is inevitable for all of us. He passed away on March 11th. Reutmann was never one to play the self-promotion game on the gallery circuit. Studio time spent working was more important. And through his patient years of creation, he leaves behind a cherished legacy in both image and word. This has been Ukrainian Jewish Heritage on Nash Holos Ukrainian Roots Radio. From San Francisco, I'm Peter Baeger. Until next time, shalom.
Ukrainian Jewish Heritage is brought to you by the Ukrainian Jewish Encounter Initiative, based in Toronto, Ontario. To find out more, visit them at ukrainianjewishencounter.org and follow them on Facebook and Twitter. For transcripts and audio files of this and earlier broadcasts of Ukrainian Jewish Heritage, please visit the Nash Holos website, www.nashholos.com.
Зелененьким вода тече, що ж мені, дівчатко, на то рече, ой, чи рече, чи не рече, гаєм зелененьким вода тече, ой, чи рече, чи не рече, гаєм зелененьким вода тече. Піду до леса без сокири, що ж би я там робив без дівчини, візьму дівчата й на ручки, будую колеса вам помалючки, візьму дівчата й на ручки, будую колеса вам помалючки. Мала моя фраєра, більш не буду. Фраєра більш не буду, на флоярці буду дуду. Мала моя фраєра більш не буду, на флоярці дуду дуду. Мала моя фраєра більш не буду.
рече, що ж мені, дівчатко, надто рече, ой, чи рече, чи не рече, гаєм зелененьким вода тече.
And a popular singer from Ukraine called Oksana Mucha, and a traditional Ukrainian folk song, Hayem Zeleninkim, The Green Grove. Ви слухаєте радіопередачу «Наш голос» Радіо Українського коріння по мережі PCJ Radio, яка подається вам англійською мовою з Британської Колумбії в Канаді. You're listening to «Наш голос» Ukrainian Roots Radio on the PCJ Radio Network, coming to you from Vancouver Island in beautiful British Columbia, Canada. And now a special feature courtesy Ukraine Today, Ukraine's first English language TV and news channel. The following is one of a series of features exploring pressing issues in today's Ukraine.
Hello and welcome to Ukraine Today. I'm Volodymyr Sologub. Right now we're at Odessa Security Forum. And join me now to discuss the security threats which Ukraine is currently facing is the Ambassador of the United States to Ukraine, Mr. Jeffrey Pyatt. Mr. Pyatt, welcome to Ukraine Today and many thanks for finding the time to talk to us.
Great to see you, Volodymyr.
So, Mr. Ambassador, during the last 2 years, Ukraine has been living in a new security environment. We have the annexation of Crimea Peninsula. For almost more than two years, there is an armed conflict in eastern Ukraine. And Ukraine has addressed a lot of security issues during that time, including with the help of its Western partners.
Right.
What are the main security challenges which you see for Ukraine at this point?
Well, I think it was very interesting to me this morning in the remarks that I made and that the Turkish ambassador made that we were so much converging in our messages, which is really that Ukraine has to fight two wars. There is a military conflict with Russia, which tragically continues in the east today. You will have strong support from the United States and many of our allies in helping you to prevail in that effort. Both the Turkish ambassador and I talked about the importance of standing on the principle of non-recognition of the annexation of Crimea, another dimension of Russia's aggression against your country, but just as important as the domestic front and the battle to reform institutions, to attack corruption, to build a judiciary which enjoys public confidence. I was very encouraged to hear President Poroshenko yesterday when we were in Kharkiv together visiting the academy, and we met with some of the police who are being trained to go to Slavyansk, Kramatorsk, Severodonetsk, and he talked about how the most valuable asset that those new police will have is public trust. And that's exactly right. So I think it really is for Ukraine a matter of fighting a two-front war, but it's a battle in which Ukraine will enjoy strong support of the United States and many of our allies.
If you allow, we would like to go back to the internal issues and the internal policy a bit later, but I still want to ask a question about the foreign aggression. Because again, during your remarks today, you said that how we, the international community, react to and answer Russia's use of force to change international borders will be critical to the future security and prosperity of this region. How big of a threat is this Russia's military aggression to the security of the entire region, of the entire Europe?
Well, nobody predicted the invasion and attempted annexation of Crimea. And after that was done, I remember a lot of the experts saying that's going to keep President Putin busy for another 20 years. And in fact, he just moved on to another stage, the hybrid war in Donbas. So I think the message is that it's critically important that we stand together as an international community, as we have done over the past 2 years, to make clear that this is not acceptable, that it represents a violation by Russia of the most fundamental principles of Euro-Atlantic security, and an open challenge to the rules of the international system. And I think we the United States, have been very clear on that. Vice President Biden, I talked about Ambassador Powers' remarks in New York at the Security Council just last week. But we cannot lose our focus on the fundamental principle, this, the integrity of international borders. Borders cannot be changed through military force in the 21st century.
But do you see the threat to other parts of Europe, to other countries in Europe from Russia?
Well, I think it's very clear that many of Ukraine's neighbors see this threat. The United States has been very clear in terms of our commitment through the European Reassurance Initiative to stand by our NATO obligations to Ukraine's neighbors who are part of the NATO alliance. Again, all of us have a stake in what's happening here in Ukraine, and all of us have a stake in upholding the principles involved.
Now, Mr. Ambassador, if you allow, can we talk a bit about Ukraine's internal politics? And
we can talk a long time about internal
I'm sure, I'm sure. And if we start about, with security, financial security, because just recently the Assistant Secretary of State, Madam Victoria Nuland, she said that IMF will not be providing further assistance to Ukraine until the political crisis is resolved. So how critical is this, the resolution of the political crisis for foreign for Ukraine's Western partners?
So a couple points. First of all, the IMF, of course, speaks for itself. But it's very clear to the United States that the substantial commitment that we have made here, $2 billion loan guarantees, another $1 billion in the pipeline, all of that is premised on the continued commitment of the government, the presidency, the Rada, to work towards reform, but also unity. It's impossible for us to continue to support as we have if it appears that the various political forces in the country are too focused on pulling each other down and aren't focused on delivering on the promise of the Maidan. So it basically comes down to the message that Vice President Biden delivered in that historic speech to the Ukrainian Rada. If Ukraine keeps reforming, the United States will continue to support. But the important thing is demonstrated commitment to the process of reform, economic reform, rule of law, deepening democracy, and unity among Ukraine's political forces.
There was a lot of criticism in the past months that the reforms which Ukrainian government has declared, that the reforms which Ukrainian government have started, are not going as fast as everybody's expecting, as Ukrainian people is expecting, as Ukraine's Western partners is expecting. Are you of the same view that Ukrainian leaders could have done it much faster?
I wouldn't be in this job if I wasn't an optimist and if I didn't believe quite profoundly in the principle that, first of all, reform is going to happen in Ukraine not because the United States asks for it or Europe asks for it, but because Ukrainian people are asking for it. This demand to reform, to change institutions, to move towards European values and European standards of governance comes from the grassroots. And that's why, as I said in my remarks today, I'm quite optimistic that it will be sustained. Everybody who I talk to wants the process to move faster. Every politician I talk to says, well, it's really hard because we've got all of these vested interests and we're trying to take those on. I think for the United States, what we hope is that the politicians recognize that this is like riding a bicycle. You have to keep moving forward or else you're going to fall over and then you'll have to start afresh. So I'm optimistic based on the conversations that I have with Ukraine's political leaders that everybody understands that. And I hope very much that in the next couple of days, we will see the major members of the coalition coming together to reestablish a consensus on the agenda of reform and to get back to the work of building a new Ukraine.
But do you believe that it's possible for the members of the current coalition to come back together and not have a new elections? Because again, as you said earlier today, you don't think that the early elections, parliamentary elections, which a lot of people are now talking about, will be beneficial for Ukraine and Ukraine's path to reform. So basically, you wouldn't like to see the parliament dissolve and go for new elections. But do you think that it's workable?
I think that's a question that the political leaders have to answer.
You just said that you were talking to them. What are you hearing from them?
What I'm hearing from them is a recognition that the stakes are very high and that Ukraine faces a uniquely challenging situation because you do have an external aggressor. That's part of the argument in my mind. That's one of the strongest arguments for the politicians coming together because, of course, it's exactly what the Kremlin wants for Ukraine to descend into political backstabbing. And the best answer to that Kremlin narrative is for the politicians to come together, to make the compromises that are necessary to reforge a consensus on reform, on modernization of the Ukrainian state, on implementation of the IMF conditionalities. I'm absolutely certain that is within reach. What it depends on is the willingness of politicians to put the country's interests first, as opposed to their individual political interests or their party agendas.
Well, they are politicians. You don't expect them to do that and disregard their polls and their ratings.
Well, I have seen enormous courage demonstrated by Ukrainians. You know, if people had been reading the polls, they would never have stood out on the Maidan for 11 weeks. You know, the challenge for the politicians is to live up to the sacrifices that have been made. That was another one of Vice President Biden's messages when he spoke to the Rada. The sacred obligation that politicians have now to deliver on all the sacrifices that Ukrainians have made, both on the Maidan and now through this terrible 2 years of battle with Russia.
Mr. Ambassador, if you allow my final question about the Prosecutor General.
Sure.
Whereas it's a customary in international diplomacy to make overall general remarks with the position of and with the Attorney General, General Prosecutor personally, both yourself and Victoria Nuland, Assistant Secretary of State, they specifically said and mentioned that this person is halting reforms within the General Prosecutor's Office personally. Everybody was expecting for months that the Prosecutor General will resign or he will be fired, but he is still in the office. And looks like it is the president of Ukraine who is not willing to get rid of Mr. Shokin. From what you're hearing from Petro Poroshenko, President Poroshenko, why is this person still in the office despite all the disappointments?
Let me be very clear on this, Volodymyr. Our focus is on the institution of the Prosecutor General. It's about building a prosecutorial service that enjoys the same kind of public confidence that the new police enjoys. You can't do that if the office of the Prosecutor General is perceived as a facilitator of corruption, as opposed to a break on corruption and an institution which goes after corrupt actors wherever they may be. Who the next Prosecutor General will be, that's up to the President through the Ukrainian Constitution and up to the Rada. The United States, as we've made very clear, is eager to work with the Prosecutor General's office. We can bring our resources, our expertise, just as we've done with the patrol police in helping to provide technical expertise to build capacity in Ukrainian institutions. We are prepared to do the same in the prosecutorial service with our FBI experts, with our Department of Justice experts, but we can only do that if the individuals who are at the top of that institution enjoy public confidence. That's not a judgment that the United States is going to reach. That's a judgment which will come from the Ukrainian Rada, from civil society, and we hope very much that decision will be made in the days ahead.
Yeah, and again, maybe I didn't make myself clear. It's not just the United States. It's, I would say, everybody. Ukrainian people, Ukrainian civil society, other Western partners. Everybody is unhappy with Prosecutor General, yet he still is in the office. Did you have a chance to, because Ukrainian people are asking this for President Poroshenko, why is he in the office? The response is there is nobody else to replace him. Obviously, the president of Ukraine cannot give you the very same response. So what is he telling you why this person is still in the office?
I will, you know, I'm not going to talk about my private conversations with President Poroshenko, but what I will say,
give us some insight,
is if you look at what President Poroshenko said yesterday when we were together at the Kharkiv Academy, he was very strong in his remarks to the police about the importance of the battle against corruption and his interest in having a prosecutorial service that meets the same high European standards of governance and public trust.
I understand. Well, Mr. Ambassador, thank you for finding time to talk to us.
Great to see you, Volodymyr.
This was Volodymyr Suluhu for Ukraine Today, together with the Ambassador of the United States to Ukraine, Mr. Jeffrey Pyatt. Thank you for watching Ukraine Today.
This has been a special feature courtesy Ukraine's first English language TV and news channel, Ukraine Today. To hear more from Ukraine Today, check all of this week's editions of Nash Holos at www.nashholos.com. And for their full roster of breaking stories, as well as interviews, press reviews, and in-depth analysis on Ukraine, follow Ukraine Today on YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, and their live blog, uatoday.tv. For the very best in Ukrainian programming, tune in to Nash Holos Ukrainian Roots Radio in Vancouver every Saturday at 6 p.m. Pacific Time on AM 1320 CHMB, live in Nanaimo Wednesdays from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Pacific Time on CHLY 101.7 FM, and elsewhere in the world on the PCJ Radio Network on AM, FM, and shortwave radio. In between broadcasts, you can find us online at www.nashholos.com. As well, make sure to follow Nash Holos on Twitter, and please like our Facebook page and check out our blog. Нежа ми вже скінчила нашу програму. Вже час додому і сказати до побачення. Але перед тим я хочу залишити вас такими словами мудрості. Наука і практика поставить людину на добрий фундамент. And our proverb of the week translates as education and experience are a good foundation for any person. Well, that about wraps it up for another edition of Nash Holos Ukrainian Roots Radio. To take us to the end of our program, we have the Canadian Rhythm Masters from Winnipeg and Ivy's Polka. I'm Pavlina. On behalf of all of us here at Nash Holos and PCJ Radio, thanks so much for listening. Until next time, до побачення.